Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast. This is your host, Jamil Hassan, the crypto hipster, where I bring you the crypto corner, where I interview founders, executives, thought leaders, entrepreneurs, artists all over the world. And today, I have an amazing guest. His name is Felix Honeywags. He is the chief executive officer of Exchange Monster, and he's coming to us live from the World Economic Forum in Davos. Felix, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I wish I were where you are right now. I've always wanted to go.
Look, it's the World Economic Forum for the first time in summer. As you may remember, it used to be in winter, full of ice and a lot of broken bones. And it's an absolutely exciting atmosphere for crypto here. Crypto has found its way onto the main stage and is more or less dominating the discussion here on the main road. There's sort of a roadie that they call the promenade. And the promenade is riddled with different crypto products. Polkadot is here. Polygon has got a huge offering, a whole variety of the exchanges, Circle, FTX, you know it. It's just exciting to be in crypto and at World Economic Forum.
Awesome. So first question for you is this. What is your background, and is it a logical background for what you're doing now?
Yeah, it is. So I've been in software development for my entire career. I worked in, of course, you know, for some of the big software companies. I worked for Microsoft, I worked for SAP and some others. And I've been a huge proponent of open source software for as long as I can remember. And in 2016, I said to myself, I took what I call my Porsche money, which is essentially the money I've saved from bonuses and whatever over the years. And I wanted to do something meaningful in software, and crypto was coming up, and I didn't quite know what the product market fit was going to be, if we ever find a use case or whatever. But I just, you know, put all eggs in one basket, dived right in, and it kind of worked out.
Awesome. So right now you're working on a company called Exchange Monster, which sounds pretty cool. So what is that all about, and what makes you different from other gaming platforms?
Essentially, I mean, it's like maybe a short story. I mean, it's like I've got some young kids that are no longer young, they're teenagers, and they're fascinated by gaming. They're huge gamers. They're both on esports teams, and I've just been watching it for a whole while. And you know, some of their friends have become weirdly successful in with their teams and as individuals, and they're now content creators. And you know, and all of a sudden, every weekend, some kid of 17 becomes a millionaire and doesn't even do that for a living. And I just find it interesting that some of these gaming providers actually don't have an economic model, but are dealing every day in virtual currency. And that kind of became the use case of approaching gaming studios and working with them to create in-game currency that has got real economic value, but also creating the fiat in, fiat out, on-ramp, off-ramp capabilities through our wallet. So that if you need to pay rent, and if you need to pay, you know, real life expenses, then that's also possible. And that's essentially what we did on a regulated platform. We're based in Zug in the beautiful Crypto Valley in Switzerland. And we create that now with this in-game currency with our partners in the gaming studios and others. And we list it on our exchange. And then we've got a whole variety of different mechanisms to drive that with our wallet, and that wallet is then, of course, integrated into an NFT marketplace where in-game collectibles and a whole variety of different digital assets can be stored, traded, and all of the good things.
So what are some of the current challenges facing the global gaming industry? Because I know that the landscape has been shifting tremendously. How can tokenized games help to solve some of these challenges?
Well, I think, you know, fundamentally, there are two different aspects here. We've got a target audience that is between 14, broadly speaking, sometimes younger actually, and 37 that is completely used to dealing in virtual currency. So 27% of the audience is not just open, but has been using virtual currencies in one way or another for a while. And we use that sort of impetus to say this, like, but then let it have an economic value. And that transition is happening actually at the moment where metaverse games are coming up, and new and interesting Web3 business models are being applied to gaming. And I think, you know, that's kind of the challenges that we are overcoming now. The biggest one of them being, how do you actually monetize? You've invested in the game. Let us help you monetize it. And that's essentially what we do.
You mentioned metaverse. And like I said earlier, I would love to be a fly on the wall in Davos, right? What challenges do you see with the metaverse and building it out? And is that a topic of agenda where you're at?
Totally. Right. Yeah, it's an unbelievably huge topic. And one of the biggest issue is obviously regulation, right? I mean, how do you kind of get any type of regulatory framework involved in the metaverse business models? And, you know, you might have an exciting idea, but how do you prevent things like fraud and this and that, and you know, sort of weird things just going on? And and that's essentially what a lot of the discussions were about. The others are, of course, what are the actual business models? I mean, you're going to sell property in the metaverse. How's that gonna work? Who's got what right to whom? And on a practicality business, how are things gonna work? And that's a discussion for us here as the crypto industry at WEF, but it's definitely a huge interest also from big business and leaders from the global economy.
So what you're saying is big businesses are also looking into getting into the metaverse. So I guess they have a different set of challenges than your retail user of it. So what would make it successful in the long term?
I mean, first of all, it's an interesting observation that I can just share with you from walking around here. It's like you've got blockchain, a whole variety of different places that have got blockchain related agendas, and you see, as compared to a few years ago before the the pandemic, you see a whole variety of different people now attending the session that actually don't belong to the crypto industries, was sort of insider and you were sort of hidden somewhere. Now, not just is it on mainstream, but a lot of people are coming in order to inform themselves. And their biggest question is how to integrate it. You know, how does the relationship look of blockchain business models in traditional whatever financial services, whether that's banking or insurance or this or that or fund management? Just like they all have the same questions. The answer to that is simply unclear, because I think many organizations have simply failed in coming up with the right type of business models, and it was too big. The project was too big. It's going to take years, and if we look into a two-year horizon, so many new trends are going to come up. Something different is going to emerge in 6 months. So to say we have to plan it for a year and then execute it for a year, this makes no sense. And that's why I think one of the solutions that I've observed here is to look to the traditional MVP model. What are some short-term goals? What can be achieved, and rather build from either the success or failure, and then take it from there.
Okay, so are you familiar with Simon Sinek's book, Start with Why?
Yes.
Okay, so some companies have, you know, raging fan bases because they make it all about the community, right? Mm-hmm. Why should more companies who have traditionally looked at only providing a service or a product look more at, you know, publishing their why so they can build that community? And if they do that, will the metaverse be successful for them?
I mean, you touched on something that is so fundamentally critical to every a crypto project, which is this community aspect or the consensus model at large. So if you take that into consideration and you say, look, every project has got an identity and they're following that identity. For instance, for us, right, our identity is gaming. We want to make it even simpler for gaming projects to monetize their audience, but also to create richer and even better gaming experiences. And I think, I mean, I don't want to criticize it directly, but I think that linkage between that why model is probably what is missing in the big business context, because who knows what a bank stands for? Certainly not freedom and choice.
I agree. I agree with you. Yeah. So I want to shift the gears a little bit. And I talked about, I want to come to Switzerland in the winter so I can bring my boy skiing, right?
You come, I'll take you.
All right. Yeah. I might take you up on that. Thank you. So Switzerland is looking to become, the global leader in crypto. And based on what I see going on in the U.S. with regulatory agencies, it has a good shot, Switzerland does. So how can Switzerland become that global leader? And then, in not only overall, but in like rabbit holes too, like DeFi, NFT, metaverse, and gaming.
Honestly, I think it's already here. I mean, it already is. It's the funniest thing. It's one of the most hidden secrets. If you came to Zug now, to the Crypto Valley, and you see sort of where we are in the geographical area, you'll find everyone that matters in crypto. I mean, the Ethereum Foundation is there, Tezos. It is an incredible ecosystem of very, very high class, well run projects. I mean, there was a report some months ago that just looked at 50 of them. 13 of them have become unicorns within 3 years. It's a vibrant ecosystem that I can only advocate to anybody with clear regulation. It's difficult. I mean, let's not, this is like, let's not deny the fact that it takes insight and planning and resources and all of those type of thing. But if you're willing to work in the framework, it's an incredibly rewarding environment.
And what is that framework like?
Yeah, the framework is essentially as follows. So if you want to create any type of blockchain, crypto, however you want to call it, a business model, it is simply required that the parties are known to one another, right? So the whole element of previous crypto that you it's all about it's all about freedom, it's all about expression and all of that is only true to a certain degree. For us, for instance, as a regulated exchange, it means, of course, KYC and anti-money laundering and all of those type of elements need to be observed, and you must be willing to partner essentially with the regulator in working on the business model. As soon as the business model is clear to the regulator within that framework, you can do whatever you want. It's like they don't want to. They have got no say on any type of regulation. On any type of technology choices, on architecture choices, on chain choices, whatever the element might be that you might be pursuing. It's simply, do we have clarity on the parties that are being involved in these? In these transactions, and that's actually basically it.
So as long as you play within the country's rules and regulations, you are good.
Precisely, but that gives you protection into the future, right? It's like the regulator is clear to say, we will not make different rules next year. there will be no change in our attitude towards this. And I can say, for being there for 4 years, that's exactly what's happened. It's like there's been a regulatory clarity ever since.
I think that's the way to go. I think there's a lot of, here in the US, there's a lot of wavering, vacillation on what the regulators say. So that ends up stifling innovation.
Precisely. I mean, think about it. You can't design a system that is supposed to do a certain thing, and then you build it, and next year you can't do that anymore. I mean, it kills business.
Yep. I know. my business was killed in 2018. So, but yeah. You know, I want to talk about, you know, the application and the application into areas where you don't may not know the KYC AML, like Africa, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, your LinkedIn profile says that you love Africa.
Yes.
What is the crypto landscape there, and what is the growth potential of the industry in Africa?
You see, it's such an interesting one, because the application of crypto could be so meaningful. I mean, let's think of simple examples. It's like, so Africa, for instance, has got a migrant workforce for the most part. That means that workers come from the rural areas, they leave their family behind, they go in the bigger cities and need to send money back and forth in order to feed their families. A perfect application for crypto in principle, particularly and then accelerated by the fact that that few of them only have got a bank account, right? So it's a perfect application for crypto, but the markets are so very specific that you almost need to go, that there's no one model fits it all. So you can say, so we can't say Africa in its entirety. There's almost 52 different scenarios for each of the countries that needs to be specifically worked on. So I think some of the participants in the crypto industry are now tackling that. I see some interesting investments being made into that direction from the likes of FTX and Binance and some of the larger ones, but I hope that they work out. They're complicated and are very resource intensive, not necessarily even capital intensive, but just, you know, human resource intensive, that need to be on the ground. For us specifically in gaming, I see an interesting opportunity, because mobile phone penetration is reasonably high, and kids are looking for ways to earn and to cash out afterwards. And kids, I mean, 14 to 27 year olds. We hope to participate very, very deeply and strongly in that.
So one of the people I interviewed earlier in January, I believe, was an ambassador, a UN ambassador to Africa. And we talked about community wallets, right? So you have one of the communities very poor, but they share one wallet and they share one platform. So
yes.
What is the opportunity for the gaming infrastructure to be built in where there's village wallets?
Oh, huge. You know, I mean, this is like literally, I mean, I could go on for hours about, I mean, think just about the opportunity. So there's a poor community wherever in Africa. Let's choose something exotic like Ghana, you know, then this is like, there's a Ghanaian tribe sitting there that of 100 people that share one wallet, and they're all sort of working for a better outcome, right? So people go and work, they put in the big city, they put money into this wallet. There's one use case. Now, what are the ones doing that are staying behind? Then it's just like, I mean, basically they could be using elements of the metaverse, of Web3, of gaming, like we do, in order to earn a living. I mean, that's a perfect application for us specifically with the fiat on ramp and off ramp capabilities that we spoke about earlier. So I mean, it's perfect. But what about regulation, and what about sort of the local requirements about that, and you've got very antiquated central banking systems in many regards, with monetary policies that go back to the 70s or to the 80s, where only the Reserve Bank governor is allowed to issue currencies, and a whole variety of antiquated but maybe necessary views in order to create economic stability. I mean, it's like I can argue both cases, but I think it's a perfect example of where we could play a ginormous role.
That's awesome. My concern is ahead of the regulators there, you know, do AML, KYC, so that when it comes to you, everything's clear. Yeah.
You know. Sure, but I mean, how are you going to do the KYC if maybe some of them don't even have an identification document? You know, this is like, these are sort of the real life challenges that of course exist. It's easy for you and me to say, you know, Switzerland, US, of course, we've got these, we've got the infrastructure, but I think there are possibly some fundamental challenges, and at the same time, there could be a ginormous opportunity for just leapfrogging that by means of technology, with community wallets, with metaverse, with Web3 business models, with global application. But there are huge concerns for stability and economic prosperity for the local regulator. I can also understand that.
Yeah, makes sense. So, say the US and say Europe drop the ball, right?
Yes.
Do you think you see Africa becoming the leading player in crypto and blockchain globally and becoming industrial?
Absolutely. It's poised for it. There are enormous technical hubs that already exist that are being exploited by some of the largest technology companies in the world, be that Cape Town, South Africa, with some 10,000 or so AWS employees developing directly for the global offices, or in Kenya, of course, where there's a ginormous Google office again as a development hub. So the technical skills already exist, and the business mindset, of course, too, because, you know, it's like if you got nothing, you're going to be a hustler, and you're going to use all the technologies that you got in order to make a living.
I agree. That comes back to what you said earlier a little bit. You said these 17-year-olds are just playing games and making millions a year.
Yeah.
You know, and you have a lot of people who are working full-time jobs, not making anything near that.
Yeah.
Do you think the bad mouthing of the crypto is to preserve the work situation instead of having everybody jet off and start playing games? You know, what do you think the impact?
Yeah, I think in that instance, it's not even bad mouthing. It's a misunderstanding. I think the details are just maybe not known, or there's perhaps even not enough education in general in order to put these different elements together. But you know, by and large, the opportunities are there, and the negative undertone does not overwhelm the demand. It's simply demand and supply. It's like, I need money. I need to make a living. How am I going to do it? And if there's a global system that enables that, that's of course very appealing.
Awesome. That makes sense too. Great. So I'd like to thank you very much for your time today. This has been a wonderful conversation. I enjoyed talking about all this stuff, and I definitely want, like, someday to be that fly on that wall in Davos. I have one final question.
Yes.
How can people find out more information about you, about Exchange Monster? How can they get involved? How can they could be a client? How can they do any of that?
Absolutely. Please visit exchangemonster.com. register an account, try it out. We've got our wallet in both the Apple and in the Android store. And of course, join our community on Telegram, Exchange Monster Official. We've got a Discord channel. We've got a whole variety of different things. If you go into any of our, you get a link tree, and you can and you can join us. Our Twitter is up to date. We are we love engaging with our community, and would like to invite you also personally to come and to visit us in Zug, in the Crypto Valley, and we'd love to talk again.
Awesome. I'm going to take you up on that. So
please do.
Thank you very much for your time today.
All right. Have a good day. Thank you so much for having me.